Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the Recuerdo monthly call on the 19th of February 2013. On the Spanish channel today, we have Carlos Vera, Adrian Caballo, Antonio Medina Gomez, Aida Novia, Eric Huesca, Sergio Salinas Porto, Silvia Helene Leiter, Natalia Ancisco, Juan Manuel Rojas, Vandes Cartoncini, and Guillermo Zamora. On the English channel, we have Carlton Samuel, Devin Antilak Singh, Cintra Suknanan, Olivier Crépin Leblanc, and Evan Leibovich. We have apologies from Alberto Soto, Humberto Carrasco, Xavier José Palero, Alfredo López Hernández, Fatima Carbonero, Philip Bolin, Nilan Behari, and Gilbert Lara sends an sensitive apology. From staff, we have Heidi Ulrich, Gregory Vanko, and myself, Natalie Perrigan. Our interpreters today are Veronica and David. I would like to remind all participants to state their names before speaking for transcription purposes and to speak the reasonable space for interpreters' sake. Thank you very much, and over to you.
This is Silvia Helene Leite. Thank you very much, Natalie. I welcome you all to this second monthly call of the year 2013. It is 3:09 UTC. It's a pleasure to have you all here. We have a great participation and attendance, so that's a very good thing for the beginning of this year. There are no pending action items. Therefore, we will start with item number 3. This is our capacity building cycle. As you all know, this will start last year. In this opportunity, we will discuss a topic. This was the most voted topic on the survey done in January in the Lacroix community. And the survey had great participation, and this is something good for this 2013. The topic that was selected has to do with the digital divide and Internet users in Latin America and the Caribbean region. And to speak about this topic, we had an old user of Internet. He has helped lots of people becoming Internet users. His name is Sergio Salinas Porto. We all know him. So in his former presentation, he asked me to say that he's the president of Internauta Argentina, vice president of LUIS, and he's also communications secretary and director of the program for the digital divide in Argentina, CTA. That's all. So having said that, I give the floor to Sergio. Sergio, you have 30 minutes. I will be telling you or showing you the time and helping you with the reading. If you want to make questions, please post your questions in the chat while Sergio is delivering his presentation. This is Sergio speaking. Thank you very much, Silvia. I had my hand up because I didn't know if before starting with my presentation there is any possibility of adding any new topic to this agenda or if it is at the end of the agenda. This is Silvia Helen Leite. Yes, Sergio, the agenda is closed. It is always closed 5 or 6 hours before the call, and any topic that needs to be discussed will be stated or should be stated at the end of the agenda. Sergio speaking. Thank you very much, Silvia. I don't know if there is any possibility of showing my presentation. Otherwise, I can proceed without my presentation. Silvia speaking. Silvia Vivanco, do we have the presentation? Silvia Vivanco speaking. What you should do is a screen share of a presentation because you are the host. So you have to open the screen and click Share My Screen so that you can control the presentation. Sergio speaking. Perfect. Do I have to do this? It is me, the one who has to do this, or Silvia? Silvia Vivanco, any of you? Sylvia speaking. Sergio, are you sharing the screen? Sergio speaking. Yes, I am downloading a program, but I'll be ready in a minute. Sergio speaking. Well, Sylvia, I cannot upload the presentation. Could you please help me? This is Sylvia speaking. It seems to be opening right now. Sylvia speaking, are you all seeing the black image on the screen showing that the information is being uploaded? Search is picking. Okay, there it is. The topic of today's call, it's a topic that we have been discussing for a long time in the association I belong to. This is Internauta Argentina. The digital divide, or as we say, digital ownership, which has to do with the use of new technologies and the development of technologies. And the person who already has the knowledge is the owner of that knowledge and the tool. Ideally for us, this is a kind of tree. We need to water this tree every day in order to build knowledge by means of commitment, involvement, in order to create capacities or build capacities among our, between quote-unquote, BRAC-S students. The teacher gives information and gives tools to acquire knowledge. That is something said by Nelson Mandela, and this is, education is the most powerful tool that can be used to change the world. If we, as members of organizations of the civil society, want to, well, we need education, because without education there is no possible change. When we speak about internet, and when we speak about the access to tools, we understand that this is more than a technological tool. This internet has become an indispensable tool for the social inclusion, as we have been discussing in the past. So I cannot think of having a better scenario to build or create citizenship based on education and the appropriation of knowledge by people. Here we have three necessary participants, or at least these are the ones we have been working throughout this time. On one hand, we have the state, a present state, a state guaranteeing the possibility of the organizations and people gathering together so that they can build or create these educational links, the civil society in which we are working, and companies. Companies have a role with their activities, with their business responsibility, and the way in which they provide support to the civil society by creating strategic alliances with the state in order to achieve goals, in order to narrow the digital divide. When we speak about statistics, here there are some of them. We see how the cake is divided in the Americas, and you see that 1.8% of those who are incorporated to the digital system are in North America. But when we consider the rest of the Americas, in this case, this is the part of the cake where we belong to. Well, the division of the cake is 49.2%. So this means that on one hand, the share of the number of users has been increased, but this also shows that there are lots of people who are outside this system. We are happy when these numbers increase, but we also know that there is a segment of the population that is outside the digital issue. So we need to double our efforts for those people to access, quickly access the system. Why? Because this will guarantee not only equality, but employment, genuine resources for vulnerable populations, and so on. So, and a strategic view for this has to do with the digital strategy. This is something important. I am also showing this information that has to do with accessing new technologies and internet users. Undoubtedly, years ago, this was not so. When we teach people incorporate internet to their lives, but there are many people who only use certain tools in the internet, but with the passing of time and with the use of the broadband and other technological tools such as cell phones, well, we have more internet users in our region. This is a very important piece of information because since June 2012, we have more than 528 million users, internet users in the Americas. I was talking about digital natives. Those are the ones who are the owners of the users, and please allow me to apologize for speaking too fast. I know that our interpreters are making their best to translate my words. But I was saying that for us, there are three types of segments. The digital natives, those who were born in 1995 onwards, they are about 20 years old. These are our kids in Argentina, and they were born. We surrounded by digital issues, and they have a fluent contact and a natural contact with technological tools. For example, I have a case of my nieces. My nieces are small kids, and they know how to manage their cell and use their cell phone. And once you see them using the phone or the cell phones, well, you see that they can handle it with no problem. So this has to do with the possibility of, with their possibility of being surrounded by digital tools. Then we have the digital migrants. At least in my country, we, for example, saw the origin of the color TV, for example. In the past, it was black and white. In the past, we used old phones. And that process, analogical process, turned into a new access to technology. But some of us were migrating to this new technology. So I consider myself, for example, a digital migrant. I had or I used analogical technology, and now I use digital technology. I remember that someone said that in the future, in every kitchen of every house, there will be a computer. And that was said not long ago. And when I heard that, I laughed. I said, that person was crazy. I thought that person was crazy, but undoubtedly, I realized that, well, this is now becoming true. Today, we have at least one or two computers in at home, for example. And then we have the digital illiterate, and that is the person who, due to reasons of age, did not have access to changes and who is outside the tools or who is outside formal employment, and that person did not have the opportunity of accessing training. So those digital illiterates are outside the possibility of using new technologies. This slide is important because it is important to highlight the social scenario. You cannot think of anything but computing and the use of internet, because this is not just a matter of zeros and ones or databases. Now we need to speak about the social scenario related to this. This social scenario allows, undoubtedly, the development of people. And as I said at the very beginning, this will deepen and will contribute to education, and there would be a direct link between the progress of a region or a country and these tools. Now, this type of education will allow us to have initiatives. Some of the items you see here are the guidelines of our capacity building. On one hand, we train people for the use of automatic tools. This gives the opportunity to people to start working in a formal employment. And we also, this also helps old people or elderly people to start using these new technologies. The interpreters are not, we are not receiving Sergio's presentation. This is the interpreter. Sergio has disconnected. Silvia speaking. Sergio, can you hear us? Silvia Vivanco speaking. Yes, Silvia, Sergio has dropped, and we are dialing back. Sergio speaking. Hello, can you hear me? This is Sergio speaking. So, can you see the presentation? So, when we speak about a plus, we are talking about the empowerment by the community. We generally work with pairs or hand in hand together with young people and adult people. We have seen how communities have grown from our intervention and from the intervention of other fellow organizations. The training for the use of computing tools is also important. And we have doubled our offer. We are now working on issues related to the training on ofimatic tools. We are inserting people into a new world, into a world related to development. For example, they can learn to write on HTML or other languages. They can develop the software, for example, apply to different tools. And based on that, we do this on with poor communities in our country, and we have been working with certain issues related to entrepreneurship. We want people to work together so that they can achieve or they can create a business. We have a group of young people and elderly people working on the employment structure in Mar del Plata, where I live. So there were people out of the formal employment. So they created a cooperative. The objective of this new business was to generate a structure where they copied or photocopied papers for the university, and they started working with students at the National University. And now students buy their recordings and the materials they create for the university. So they get the information and they provide students with information for their classes. On the other hand, and this has to do with the social function of these telecenters or these technological centers, as we call them here, this is the opportunity that we have to link with the state. We need to take into account that we need to be present in places where the state is working, by means of micro-businesses. And by means of these tools, communities are given the opportunity to develop marketing campaigns, for example. Now, in terms of the participation within the society, well, we need to speak about the creation of a viable alternative for poor people. Paulo Freire said that any educational act was a political act. And this has to do with the foundations of the civil society, I think. Everything, any educational act has to do with a full political act, with the civil exercise, with teaching, and with participation. In this picture that you can see here, there are people from the community creating their training center. These centers are created on, are created by the community and led by community leaders. For example, here you can see people, elderly people, and here you can see young people participating as well. I don't know if I have enough time, but the experience that we have accumulated throughout this time has been really a lot. We have been working on issues related to free software. We have migrated all the training to free software. So Prezi is an example of free software. So throughout this time, we have been giving people tools for them to start acquiring digital tools. And this is the objective, the main objective, in order to narrow the digital divide, at least in the Argentine Republic. Now I open the floor for questions. So any comment or question is welcomed. Thank you very much.
This is Silvia speaking. Thank you, Sergio. I don't see any question, but if you do have a question, please do raise your hand. We still have 12 minutes for this part, so you can make oral questions if you wish to do so. Antonio Medina raised his hand. Antonio, you now have the floor. This is Antonio speaking. Thank you, Silvia. Thank you, Sergio, for sharing your vision. I would like to ask you, with these dynamics that you are presenting here, there are two scenarios that I think are important. With the risks that we see at the level of the privacy of citizens on the one hand, and then on the other hand, what is the position of government, or what is your position regarding open source software? Thank you. This is Sergio speaking again. Antonio, we will ask you to make the question again because I didn't really hear it. Unfortunately, your voice is very loud. Antonio speaking again. Okay, here's my question. I want to know your position as the president or as the head of the association called Internauta. What is your opinion in relation to the privacy of users in these times that is signaled by something that's a lot more complex and this is very updated? And secondly, in connection with the possible intervention of government to control the internet, what could be, how could this freedom be? Sergio speaking again. Well, Antonio, first of all, we understand that the internet should be free, that there should be a possibility of access, that should be an irrestrictive access. We really value the activities of civil society with respect to freedom and with neutrality on the network. This for us is essential. and he has been part of our tools, and he has been so for a very long time. I am on that page. I don't really understand what you mean with your first question, and I think it's actually related to the second one. Is that correct? Antonio speaking again. We can barely hear him. I want to know about the impact of the use of internet on citizens. Sergio speaking again. Well, the issue of privacy is a very concerning issue for us. We have seen how many times people have attempted to try to break with this. People have tried to put users in a very uncomfortable situation. But we will never stop debating, we'll never stop discussing, we will never stop generating proposals, and especially we will never stop defending our rights. We have a right to our privacy, we have a right to the restrictive use of the internet, we have a right to prevent these tools to be manipulated by states, and we also know that states should be friends and not enemies of people. So we believe the states should be able to participate in the possibility to generate alternatives for the use of the internet, but they states should not be allowed to intervene on the rights of the users. I see there are some questions in the chat room. Would you like me to answer them? This is Silvia speaking. Sergio, I would like to ask what Eric Weska said, and he wants to know about these training centers. How do you involve attendees so that they continue to attend, especially when they don't really have very much of an idea of what's going on? Sergio speaking again. Well, we start by a very simple thing. We go and speak to the community, and we try to define together, and this is a dialogue that we start with the community. So we define common strategies, and we don't really arrive there as colonizers. We actually join the rest of the people. This is an excellent tool. The other day I was explaining to one of our colleagues. They are trainers there, and before the end of 2012, we had a group of trainers. So we were talking with them about how to handle this with the community. In very poor communities, some people provide us with the best chair that they have, and it might be dirty. So what you go is you clean it, and then you sit down. The person on the other side will take it wrongly. So you have to be aware of the forms. That is, you have to know how you're going to communicate with the people that you're going to talk to. So we try to agree on the issues that we're going to deal with. We're going to say what are the expectations, because in some communities they tell you, well, you know, now we're working with an Aboriginal community, and this community is interested in training seniors who actually are used to working in agriculture. And then on the other hand, there are younger people who are not attending school yet, and they want to know something about computer issues. So these people were interested in just starting to work on fair trade. So if we're going to have fair trade, when we're going to remove intermediaries from the middle, one of the things we need to do is to try to train them. So this actually exceeds the training that we're giving. So there are people who assume roles, and there are people who will be trained, but they will also try to have the place cleaned. And other people will get trained, but they also will have involved in a peer-to-peer work, and they will join the rest of the community. So that's our idea. We maintain these technological centers through leadership, and leadership is started by means of great needs of the community. If the community needs to have a place to speak on the phone or a place to send their kids so that they can learn or get new skills in technology, and at the same time they need a place where they can form some kind of kindergarten for the children, this is how the community will be formed, and the place will not only be used as an educational center but also as their own place. So that you can help with other needs that exist in the community. So I'm not sure I answered, but this is where we're going. Silvia speaking. I think part of what you answered has to do with what Carlos Vera stated. By the end of the text, he says, what is the approach that you think should be established in a new strategy to face the digital divide? I think there is an issue or a challenge, that's the issue of broadband. There are many countries that are, I think Ecuador is also doing something in connection with bridging the digital divide. Venezuela has this, Brazil has this, Uruguay has this, and Argentina as well. And this is a project of involvement in new technologies by very young children, and of course, this will not go forward if there is no strategy so that we can have them there, that we can get a permanence there. So we have to go in that direction. We need to link very basic issues, very basic technological issues that we are not so concerned about them because we have more access to machines, to computers, and our community technological centers have very old machines that we are still using them. Now, we do need to know how to maintain connectivity everywhere, and to have these or to consider these as a state issue. This is Silvia speaking. Sergio, we have our last question. This is Juan Manuel speaking, saying he has no AC room. We now give the floor to Evan, who has raised his hand. Evan, please go ahead.
Thank you very much to everybody. My name is Evan Leibovich. I'm calling
Evan,
from Toronto, Canada.
Wait a moment. There's a lot of people speaking.
Oh.
This is Sylvia speaking, Juan Manuel. You need to understand now Evan has the floor, and then you will speak, okay? Okay, please go ahead, Evan, now, yes.
I'm sorry. My name is Evan Leibovich. I'm calling from Toronto, Canada. I'm vice chair of ALAC, and I have an extreme interest in what you're dealing with. This brings a perspective into LAC RALO and into ICANN at large that's very welcome and very necessary. I have one specific question on an issue that is becoming very important within ICANN right now, and that the perspective of you and the groups you're working with is going to be very important. How do you see the balance taking place between the privacy of people going on the Internet and the accountability of people providing information on the Internet, with issues to do with who is and other things that are right now under heavy discussion within ICANN right now? We're trying to deal with how to address the balance between protecting the privacy of people, but also protecting, also addressing the accountability and the openness of people who provide information on the Internet, who could be, in some cases, providing fraudulent or misleading information. How would you talk about and how would you deal with the issues of balancing privacy and accountability? Thanks very much.
This is Sergio speaking. Thank you, Ivan, for your participation. You know, I appreciate your participation, and the fact that you're here is very good for us all, because I know you contribute a lot to the discussion within ALAC and at large. In our training centers, we provide... That is, I don't really want to talk about courses, but we do give talks, and we show them how they should use the Internet properly, what is a good usage of the Internet. And the issue of the good usage of the Internet is discussed, up to what extent should the Internet be used, when is there privacy, when is it that we should... Or actually, this has to do with the rights that you claim. One claims for his or her rights through respecting the other. I'm not really sure if I answered your question, but part of the educational structure or the training structure that these technological centers have is related to the good use of the Internet, undoubtedly, and the good use or how to use. We have very bad sound. We apologize. There's a lot of people speaking. Interpreters apologize. This is Celia speaking. Juan Manuel, do you hear us? Sergio, do you hear us? This is Celia speaking again. Juan Manuel, do you hear us? Celia speaking. I think Juan Manuel is not listening to us, and we have exceeded the time we had devoted to the training time. So I would like to ask any of you who have a question, please do email it to the list or write it here on the chat room, and I'm sure Sergio will answer. Sergio, would you like to say something else? This is Sergio speaking. I didn't really see that they are having... Eric is saying that they are implementing a community issue. So this is something perhaps that we can raise as a community issue again. But we are working in connectivity questions, wireless connectivity outside, that is offline. There is an experience called Buenos Aires Libre and another one called Mar del Plata Libre, where through Wi-Fi people get connected without being on the net, and they are on a sort of a parallel network. And so we exchange files, etc., in a huge community that is being built up. And if this experience is okay for you, I can talk to you about it. So this is it. I thank you very much for the possibility you're giving me to speak today before you. That's all. Thank you. This is Silvia speaking. Thank you, Sergio. It's a pleasure to have you here. And we see many people are interested in this issue because it was the most voted issue, so it was great to have you here. Thank you very much for your time and for your presentation. Eric is saying that he would like to give a big round of applause, so you actually do deserve an applause. So we now go on to item number 4. There are many news, and Fatima is going to talk to us about the regional meeting in Uruguay. There are lots of things that they discuss. So if you'd like to speak, Fatima Compranero, you now have the floor.
This is Fatima Compranero speaking. Thank you very much, Sylvia. I think 10 minutes will be enough. I will try to speak slow for our interpreters. I sent an email to the list. I don't know if you had read it. I sent it on the 6th and 7th February. There was a meeting, a retreat for the LAC strategy group, working group. Hello, who's speaking? Fatima speaking again. Sorry for the interruption. This regional strategy for Latin America and the Caribbean region started in December. We worked with delegates from different communities or constituencies of ICANN from our region, Latin American and the Caribbean region. So we had this face-to-face meeting to work on the creation on the strategy itself. And during the meeting in Montevideo, there was a great advancement in our work. In the email I sent, I somehow remind the Lagrado region how we worked in that meeting or during that meeting among all the participants, because at that time there was no draft about this strategy to share with all the community. We have drafted the vision of our regional strategy, the objective, the strategic objective, and the strategic objective, and now we are developing the strategic project for our region. This document, this draft document, is not finished yet. In a few days, we will be finishing the document, and we will share the document with all the participants in this group and with our communities. Here with them, we are representing Lagrado. So once we have the draft finished, we will submit this draft to consultation so that we can obtain feedback to support the strategy. The idea is to have this strategy ready, or the document ready, for Beijing in April, probably to present this document in the meeting in Beijing, and if it is not ready by that time, the following month there will be a meeting in our region apart from the Beijing meeting. We have a wiki page, and I think Dev is sharing the link with you. There's a wiki, a Lagrado wiki, with all the documents that we have been working with. There is a SWOT analysis already created, and what Lagrado said about strategic planning was taking into account. So I here thank Dev, Alberto, and Alejandro for sharing those documents. They contributed to the ICANN regional strategy, and today, this morning, we have a third call to discuss some details and to establish deadlines in terms of our future work. I would like to highlight the great effort and the goodwill of all the participants in the meeting and those participating remotely, because they made their best to have a good result. Up to now, we have a draft, a good draft of a very good work, and we are considering the interests and needs of each of the communities and constituencies that are part of ICANN and which represent our region. There are interesting points. For example, something that was being discussed has to do with achieving greater participation by governments in our region in the GAC. So we are discussing now this. We are talking about training capacity building, especially for users, for those who are part of the business sector and the private sector as well. And we also know that we have low participation or representation of our region in ICANN, so we are creating outreach. And there are some other points that I don't remember now, but if you read the draft, you will see them. So please take some time to provide input and feedback because your comments are really important. On the wiki, you will see the report posted. You will also see many documents that have been uploaded. So any question or comment, please send it to me, Dev, Banda, or Alejandro, and we will welcome them all. So I see Banda and Dev, so I will ask them to add whatever they want if I am leaving something behind. And if not, I am available to answer any questions here or by email. That's all. Thank you very much, Sylvia. Sylvia speaking. Thank you very much, Fatima. I don't know if Banda or Deb would like to add any comment regarding this item 4 on the agenda. Sylvia speaking. Deb is thanking you in the chat. Your summary was very concise, Fatima. Banda, is there any comment? Thank you very much, Dev. There is nothing to add. Dev said there is nothing to add. So now I think we can proceed with item 6, and this is the WHOIS update, and now we will give the floor to Carton Samuels. Carton, you have the floor. Go ahead, please.
Thank you very much, Sylvia. This is Carlton Samuels for the record. Welcome, everyone. I'm just spending a few minutes to update you on what's happening with the WHOIS. I'm going to go over it fairly quickly because it's a long process. But some of you may recall that there was a WHOIS review team that was raised based on the affirmation of commitments. The AOC compels review of the WHOIS construct. They spent a lot of time going through it, and they issued a final report in May of last year, and you see the report laid out there. There are a couple of things that you will see from the report, and we're not going to go into it in detail here. It shows you the scope that they were supposed to do, and the scope was to review the extent to which ICANN's WHOIS policy and its implementations were effective, and it met the needs of users, law enforcement, and promote consumer trust. And that was the scope of the review team. The composition of the review team was lots of people from all the ICANN constituencies and law enforcement and so on. It was a very balanced set of people. They worked very well. One of the things I congratulated Emily Taylor on is the extent to which they took to solicit the views of the community. I think that was excellent. And they came out with some recommendations. They had 16 recommendations, and the recommendations covered a barrage of things. It covered, the first one was about strategic priority. It said that the board ought to consider who is the strategic priority. That will have some implications, which I'll speak about very soon. And it goes in several other, that we should have a single WHOIS policy. It speaks about outreach. It speaks about compliance. It speaks to data accuracy and so on and so forth. So then the board gets this report. It's compelled to respond to it. Again, the affirmation of commitment requests that. Requests and requires. So the board met back in November, and they had some resolutions, And again, I'm pasting the resolutions in the chat. And in this situation, the board says, well, we have looked at the reviews team work, and they acknowledge the fundamental purposes and objectives of collecting, storing, maintaining WHOIS access. And they said, well, we need to launch a new effort to redefine what WHOIS is supposed to be and what it is supposed to mean. And it actually says we need to access it to GLD policy and registration data, contractual negotiations, and so on. And so there were two resolutions. It asks the CEO to launch a new effort, and it asks the CEO to continue efforts to fully enforce existing consensus policies and contractual obligations related to the WHOIS collection and usage and so on. So the board got into the act. And the CEO then did what the board requested, and they, one of the first acts was to form this expert working group to take another crack at looking at the whole WHOIS question. And that's how I became a member of the expert group on WHOIS. It came out of, again, out of the WHOIS review team final report and its recommendations. The board took up the WHOIS review recommendation to get involved at the strategic level. They passed resolutions back in November of last year, and one of the resolutions was that the CEO was supposed to launch a new effort to looking at the whole WHOIS this question as a strategic priority, and secondly, to continue to make enforcement of existing WHOIS contractual obligations and policy important. So that is the gist of where the WHOIS working group comes from. This has been a long story. It's nothing new, but where we are in the process at the moment. So let us talk about what exists today. Most of you will know that the current registry accreditation agreement is the contract that compels the collection of registrant data and the use of that registrant data. And that is covered in clauses 3.2 and clause 3.3 of current RAA. It's very clear. It tells you what the data set, the WHOIS data set is, and it directs what is to happen when you collect that data set. The problems inherent in this activity is A, the accuracy of the data set, and B, the ongoing conundrum that by collecting the data, elements of that data set, and publicly publishing those as per the RAA and the obligations of the registrars, then you are degrading privacy rights of individuals. That's one such outcome of this. The fact is that if you look at the history of the WHOIS and the WHOIS review team final report gives a pretty concise history of the WHOIS. And if you want to look at the many ways that the WHOIS data is used, then I suggest you see the report that was developed by the staff on a request of the GNSO Council, which is an inventory of WHOIS service requirements. And that report goes into detail about what the uses are of the WHOIS data. It goes into details about some of the disabilities of current WHOIS, especially with respect to internationalized domain names registration. So, where are the elements that are consistent with both the contract and with the expectations? The new registry agreement that is being negotiated devise a service requirement for the WHOIS, and it also has an accuracy specification for the new WHOIS in the new registry agreement. This accuracy program speaks to what should happen with the data that is collected. So, for example, it requires to validate the presence of data in all the data fields that are subject of the WHOIS data set, which is in subsection 331 of the new registry agreement. It asks for validation of the email addresses. It also asks for validation of telephone number. In fact, it asks for validation of the several pieces of contact data that makes up the WHOIS data set. The issue is becoming even more complex by virtue of the new GTLD program. Here is what obtains. Currently, WHOIS data, that is to say, the data that is defined in the registry accreditation agreement that must be collected at registration and displayed in a specific way to ordinary internet users, that data is now defined in the RAA. And there are two places where that data could be kept. The difference is in the where the data is warehoused in the registries as opposed to the registrars. In registries that are called thick WHOIS, all of the registrant data, inclusive of the pieces that make up the WHOIS data set, is stored with the registry, in a registry database, and there are consensus policies that speaks to its maintenance, its transfer, and so on. With registries that are thin, and to date there are two main thin registries, and that is the .com registry and the .net registry, most of the pieces of data that constitutes the WHOIS data set is kept at the registrar level, and the registrar is compelled by contract to make that data available for end users. Because of this anomalous situation, the way WHOIS data is treated in thick and thin registries is different. There's also this one issue. If you look at the amount of registrations that are linked to the .com and the .net registry for GTLDs, I'm speaking GTLDs now, those make up the bulk of the registry, the URLs, the domains that are registered. So there is a real issue between data management and usage, between thick registries and thin registries. The new GTLD program has mandated that all new registries will be thick registries, meaning that the data for registration data, registrants, will be kept at the registry level, and therefore it's the registry that is responsible for its availability and public publications. I'm going through this background to tell you why the WHOIS matter has been such a bugbear for all of these years. It is not only because of lack of uniformity in the way the data is treated and collected, but also the concerns about undermining of privacy, of personal privacy, in the way the data is treated or could be used by anyone who could harvest that data. This is a short synopsis of what could happen, and this is just the kind of input that this experts working group will be looking at. We are going to be getting together in a couple of meetings before Beijing to see if we can reach a consensus on what the objectives of the WHOIS in terms of registration and directory services is intended for, and how we might accommodate the various concerns of the various constituencies. Thank you very much for the time.
Thank you, Carlton. This is Sylvia. Thank you very much for your report. It was very complete. And I see Fatima would like to ask a question. So, Fatima, please go ahead. This is Fatima speaking. Thank you very much, Sylvia. Thank you, Carlton, for this explanation. I always torture Carlton with WHOIS questions. So thank you very much for your availability and congratulations for being appointed within this group, this review team. And this is then a question on this issue that I would like to ask Carlton. What do you think about .cat that has modified its policies to adapt it to the European Union policies, the European Union regulations? So if you could please answer at least quickly on this issue, I would greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
This is Carlton. Thank you, Fatima, for the question. We've had a discussion on this, and I'm giving you again my personal view of it. The .cat, as is the case when you have registry agreements, the registry agreements are contractual agreements between ICANN and the registry, and there can be reasonable adjustments made to that framework within the context of the way the contracts and the law of contracts operate. The CAT registry has decided that it is going to make WHOIS conform to the EU data and privacy policy. I personally, if I look at what they're trying to do, it seems to me that there are two things that need to happen. First of all, my reading of the EU data policy makes it perfectly clear that if you have a contract that requires you to provide personal data, you have the right to know what that personal data would be used for. And so far as I'm concerned, as long as the contract between the registry and registrar let users know that the registrant data is required and what is being used for, it is certainly good enough. I have a sneaking suspicion that we will have to revisit this, because any opportunity that is taken to put any kind of hurdle in the way of end users, ordinary end users having access to that data, who is data, I would find not in the interest of end users. The major difference between the .cat situation and the GTLD situation that we're talking about is that .cat is actually restricted to a community grouping. And so maybe you can see a difference in terms of the community. But certainly, with respect to a GTLD, a generic top-level domain, I would oppose any and every attempt to reduce the rights of users, end users, to access accurate WHOIS data. Thank you.
This is Sylvia speaking. Thank you, Carlton. Now our chair, Jose Arce, would like to speak. So, Jose, please go ahead. This is Jose speaking. Thank you very much, Sylvia. I am not in the AC room, so I'd like to thank Sergio for his presentation and Carlton as well, and congratulate Carlton publicly for his new appointment on the team. So this is a good opportunity to say that I would like to congratulate Carlton. And now, I would like to touch on an issue that is not on the agenda, but I would mention this briefly, and it's related to the work that the team, for the review team of for the new GTLD seed. And with respect to this group, I first of all would like to congratulate you on the work that you have done. I know it's been very hard work, and I have been able to understand a little bit more what you do in that team, because the two representatives were Dev and Marcelo Teles, and Marcelo could never participate in the group, and we could never cover that place with anybody else. But knowing the work of this group a little bit more, I do want to congratulate you, because it has been very difficult work. If you reach a conclusion, a good or bad conclusion, we don't really care about the opinion of anybody, but you have done a very, very good work. So I'd like to congratulate Dev and all of the review team. And I do think, if I can take the floor for a couple of minutes, it's good to say something about this work. So that's all. Thank you very much. This is Sylvia speaking. Thank you, Jose. Sergio raised his hand. Sergio, please go ahead, and then Banda will have the floor. This is Sergio speaking. Hello, do you hear me? Thank you very much, Sylvia. This is Sergio Salinas Porto for the record. I would also like to congratulate the work of this working team, but I have some reserves regarding the results. I think the results for the region is important. There were two issues, or perhaps three, that were important. The CBA point, the Amazon issue, and the Patagonia issue. And we have seen this reflected, or so far I have not seen the questions of the region in this group, and I am concerned, very concerned, because I have talked a lot with different people who have been involved in this work group, and I don't really know if you didn't understand me or if they didn't want to understand me, but I'm very concerned about the results, especially with the dot Patagonia and the dot Amazon. These are two important issues that are key issues, and I believe that if there are users in a country who oppose something, then ALEC has to work as a spring when it comes to defending those rights and not as a hindrance to those issues. It's very hard to understand, Sergio. We should not consider them a company and not give rights to the users. It was a very hard work, and I am concerned about the results. I'm very, very concerned about the results. That's all. I just wanted to raise that issue. Thank you. This is Sylvia speaking. Vanda, you now have the floor. Hello, this is Vanda. I wrote something on the chat room because I think that we actually have been working on the .cat a lot. And we talked about technical issues separated from the other issues. And all this was just to make a contribution to this work group. But I believe that we will have in the new GTLDs, we will have many similar situations where there are proposals, there are governance proposals for these new TLDs. So I believe that as long as there is a specific governance where users are part and they approve this governance, I think that it is adequate because the others should look or should see the cybercrime, and I have seen this registered. I actually saw this registered. All the Huey's data were properly recorded. I don't think it is necessary to open these users, if they understand, this should not be so. But the persistence, the right persistence, or the right existence of all of the Huey's data that should be available is necessary for the world community. I think this is the main issue that Fatima mentioned. Thank you. This is Sylvia speaking. Dev, you now have the floor.
Sorry. Thank you very much. Ivan Antelopin speaking. With regards to the GTLD review group, one of the challenges we've been facing is that in regards to the process, is that in trying to get comments from the at-large community, and I have to say, there were very, very, very few comments in the previous months, and literally only within a few hours of the deadline, that somebody made a request to have a comment on Amazon and on Patagonia, which and actually on several other TLDs. So this makes, I think, it difficult to get to have an effective discussion and dialogue and so forth. Now, with regards to, well, I would say the results, as Sergio put it, I just posted a link to the community objection grounds. Once the review group determined that there didn't appear to be any limited public interest concerns as per the applicant guidebook, we then looked at the community objection grounds. And there is a very specific, the applicant guidebook is actually very specific in what is considered to be community objections. There are like four specific tests that an objection can be heard. And what is critical is that the objector has to meet all four tests in the standard for the objection to prevail. So the four tests were on the community invoked by the objector, clearly delineated community. There must be substantial opposition. Community opposition to the application is substantial. Targeting, the objector must prove a strong association between the applied for GTLD string and the community represented by the objector. And there is the detriment, and which says that the objector must prove that the application creates a likelihood of material detriment to the rights of the portion of the community to which the string may be explicitly or implicitly targeted. So what happened was that after the discussion and reviewing the comments that were posted onto the wiki, and I thank those persons who took the time out to post comments on the wiki, that when we did a detailed ranking of the community grounds and decided whether, based on the comments received, that whether these four criteria, community, substantial opposition, targeting, detriment, whether these were passed or not, in terms of for Amazon and for Patagonia, it is primarily the detriment factor that most review group members felt that they did not pass that threshold. And then based on that, we decided not to proceed with drafting an objection statement, because again, it's not whether one test is proven. It must meet all four tests have to be proven and for the objection to prevail. So that was the reason. That was the reasoning behind it. Just to mention also, with regards to Marcelo Tellez, unfortunately, due to personal reasons, he said that he was not able to participate and decided to step down about a week or two ago. So we have accepted his stepping down from the group, from the review group, and it's up to La Qualo to decide whether they wish to have a representative on this review group, given the stringent timelines.
Dev, this is Sylvia speaking.
Thank you.
She would like to simply state that we are just to get by the hour. Thank you very much,
sure.
Dev. I would like to give the floor to Evan because we are about to reach the top of the hour, and there's also Sergio who will be the last person to take the floor. This is Jose speaking. I just wanted to speak for 30 seconds. Evan, now you have the floor, and please be very brief because we are reaching the top of the hour. Evan, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, and I will be brief. I simply wanted to make sure that people recognize the very difficult work that Dev has been doing in trying to answer the very specific and very detailed requirements that have been put on this particular objection process. The reason I'm speaking now is to make sure that Lacrallo understands that there are two channels to participate in this. ALAC and at large has the ability to comment on any ICANN issue at any time and send advice to the board. If Lacrallo believes this is a very important issue, the committee that Dev is chairing is not the only channel that is possible. The group that Dev is chairing has a very specific mandate under very specific criteria. If that is not sufficient, and based on the work that has been done so far, it has not been sufficient, but if Lacrallo believes that an intervention is still necessary, Lagrello still has the ability to raise the issue as a region, to bring it forward to ALAC, and to advance to ALAC that this should be brought up as a public interest issue to the board. That kind of advice is still possible, and if that is still a channel open, over and beyond the work that has been done by the excellent work that Dev and his review group have done. Thank you.
This is Silvia speaking. Now, Sergio, you have the floor. This is Sergio Salinas Porto for the record. I'm going to be very brief. With respect to what Dev said, I will make reference to just one issue, but I think this deserves more discussion. It's not necessary to have many users. Actually, there are many users who talked about the .dot Patagonia, and this is in the ICANN registry. It is not necessary to have many opinions on the wiki. It's only enough with only one person raising his voice. That's sufficient. But there is only one company that wants to have the .dot Patagonia. So with only one user of the network saying that there are no sufficient rights and there is a fundament, a rationale stating that .dot Patagonia is the brand of origin. And in Patagonia, there are many people working selling products that are manufactured in the Patagonia region. Only with that is sufficient. This is something to continue discussing at a similar time, not now, but I wanted to state this because I think we should not go around the bush with it. That's all. Thank you. Sylvia speaking. Now Jose Arce has the floor. This is Jose speaking. Just to close, I wanted to thank Ivan, just to clarify what is the path that the region has ahead. And then another issue is I understand the point that Sergio is stating, but this issue was not on today's agenda, and I brought it because I consider the region needs to discuss it today, and any of us should express and have the opportunity to talk. And I appreciate something in the work group, and it's the fact that they had to comply with the requirements stated on the guidelines, on the applicant guideline, and the requirements are very clear. Perhaps the problem in the region is the requirements themselves, who cannot be controlled by the work group. This is something that can be discussed a lot in Lacrallo, if we, the region so decides, and we have many days to continue on this. So thank you very much, Sergio, for your opinion. Thank you, Dev, for your clarification. And that's all. Thank you. This is Silvia speaking. Thank you, Jose. There are two items pending that were just dealt by me. They have to do with the electoral process that we started on February 7th. Everybody received the email where we opened the process, and I just wanted to remind you that it goes from February 7th to March 7th at 2359 UTC, and for those representatives of the LLSs who would like to run for chair or secretary of the region, we can continue discussing this because this is an issue to discuss. And finally, we have received a request from an organization in Paraguay who wants to be part of the Lacrallo region. It's called CIDIC, Technology, Education, and Development in Paraguay. And for this reason, we at ALAC, or ALAC has asked that we provide information and advice on these organizations. So we will open a wiki page so that people who know about this organization or have more information about it can put it on the wiki page. And we will also determine a deadline, and within that deadline we will be able to provide advice to ALAC. We have exceeded our time by 6 minutes. This has been an excellent teleconference. I would like to thank you all. And as I said at the very beginning, it seems that 2013 is going to be a very powerful year. There's a lot of participation and engagement. We are very happy for this. So thank you very much for your time. And we will continue to be in contact through the list. Thank you very much. Good night and good afternoon. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye, all.